morning, good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis. The late Patty Fink just pulled into our parking lot.
She did.
She'll be in just a minute. First time she's done that since she's married. She's always been here in the nick of time, just as the theme song is ending. She screeches into the parking lot, comes racing into the studio, but she'll be in a minute. Our guest today, work with the ACA, I guess. Marge Petty is an appointed official with the Department of Health and Human Services. And our other guest is Daniel Bouton, who's with the Community Council of Greater Dallas. And he works with a team of navigators, and he'll tell us what he does. First of all, let's just start with, you hear the ACA, and the initial thing that people think is, oh, well, that's gone. It's not. Right?
Right.
Okay, so people, there is a deadline this week to sign up for insurance. It's December 15th.
Right.
And people should worry about it or not?
No, you should not worry about it. This is, and David, thank you so much for the privilege of being with you all today. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, very few people call this a privilege.
Oh, I do. Are you kidding? I'm thrilled to be here.
We're thrilled to have you.
We're delighted to have you.
No, thank you. Well, you know, you all know, I'm sure, that the Obama administration has believed and been really committed to the health and wellness of all Americans, which means to the level of equality. And so we've been very proud to do our part to protect the rights of the LGBT community. And so I'm here and pleased to represent the administration in that regard. Your question specifically in terms of whether the consumer should worry about signing up, the answer is no. The reality is that the deadline for them to begin with their health insurance in January 1 is December 15th. Though there is the opportunity to enroll through January 31st, we don't wait. You know, you can be covered in January if you meet that Thursday, December 15th deadline. And the reality of it is insurance companies are signing a contract with the consumer to offer them insurance and assure that they get that. So
for the year.
For the year.
And I've actually heard a couple of people say this, why should I sign up for insurance for January and then it's gone in February? That's not what you're signing up for. You're signing up for insurance for the year.
That's correct. And you're actually signing up for insurance in the private market with private insurance companies. The federal piece of it is it's a portal that you go through to shop, to see what you can compare the plans, see what's available. The doctors that are on your consumer list, the prescriptions that you need, you can determine that ahead of time with help from people like Daniel here in the Dallas DFW community and the surrounding community all the way down to Waco.
Well, let's just go right to Daniel. Daniel, tell us what it is that you do and how you can help people and how to get in touch with you.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for having me. And just like Marjorie was saying, I lead a group of certified navigators through the federal government to access healthcare and affordable healthcare and quality healthcare for the community. What we do, we take care of 56 counties and the community council helps the community address the needs that they have, and one of those needs is health care. Mm-hmm. So we sit with consumers. We help them look at their options, and just like Marjorie was saying, we help them access different options through the marketplace. Again, the marketplace is just a play. It's just the point where we are going to look at all the different options, different insurance companies, and the navigators are going to help the community look at those plans, making sure that they are selecting the plan that fits their needs when it comes to providers, when it comes to medications. I do want to mention that the marketplace, it's new and improved, and it's amazing the tools that we can find, healthcare.gov, that help the community find medications, making sure that we're looking at the providers that the consumer is needing, and before they enroll, making sure that they enroll in the plan that they're going to need. So basically that's what we do right now.
Do you all go out
to the community and, you know, to try and get consumers or educate them, or do you let them come to you?
Absolutely. So a little bit of both. We are out in the field helping consumers. The best way to get a hold of us is through our direct 800 number. And if you don't mind, David, let me share
sure.
that. 844-831-9600. And that is our 800 number that goes directly to our office. Again, we take care of 19 counties that Community Council is in charge of. But, like Marjorie was saying, we go down to Waco. We have 56 different counties that we are serving. And we take care of the consumer directly in our office here in Dallas, or we have navigators, again, in 56 different counties that meet consumers out in the field. And again, that's the navigator for the community to help, you know, help the community access health care.
What are some of the things that specifically the LGBT community might be looking for? That might be slightly different than the community in general.
Slightly different, but I think, you know, for the LGBT community, I want to make sure that we are completely trained and friendly to access the needs. But, you know, for the past 2-3 years, we've been helping the LGBT community HIV positive. I want to say that it's a very detailed process to make sure that we help the consumer access the doctors that they're helping and access medications. And again, with these new tools through healthcare.gov that help us, and it's very, very easy, but help us find the plans that covers those medications and covers treatments and covers the doctors that they're helping with those treatments. So that's what we're doing in the Community Council and the navigators, helping consumers HIV positive to access the right plans, the right medications, and the right providers.
David, I might mention that the administration just recently put out an annual HHS LGBT report, and one of the three things that they cited, one is that there's a permanent LGBT health advisor to the secretary in D.C. that is career. It's not a political person that's going to come and go, but that's a career person that is in place ad infinitum. The second thing is an enhanced LGBT health data collection and research opportunity, so that, for example, we've added questions about sexual orientation to the National Health Interview Survey, which helps collect information so that we can better serve that community. And then the third thing is the Affordable Care Act. Well, how has that affected the LGBT community in particular? Beyond extending coverage to about 20 million Americans currently that are insured through the Affordable Care Act, it ensures that the LGBT Americans can't be charged higher premiums because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. And earlier this year, we did finalize a provision in the law, 1557, for you, those of you that like to get into the weeds.
That would be Patty. Who would?
Okay. That was going to be my question. Let's talk about 1557.
Okay, great. That's exactly where I was going. The 1557, which requires, basically, makes it clear that people cannot be denied health care or coverage based on their sex, including gender identity or sex stereotyping. And among other things, this means that transgender people can no longer be denied health coverage just for being who they are.
That's wonderful.
So that is in place that as of July. So all providers, and some of this is an education process, okay? I'm going to assume the best, that it's an opportunity to educate and educate providers about the rights that the LGBT community has, and, you know, so that we're partners in the community in providing that health care.
And you might not even know this yet, but one of the problems transgender people have had in having their health covered is that there are certain sex-specific things that a doctor tests for. So if somebody is female to male and gets uterine cancer, well, it's not covered. You're a man. Are they now mandated to just treat the person that if you happen to have a uterus and you have uterine cancer, it'll be covered?
That's correct. Or, you know, a similar example would be breast cancer exams. you know, that's not just for women.
No, men get it
you
also.
Know, men have breast cancer as well. So it's important that for the LGBT community, I think, to know our partners in that community, to know, in fact, that their voices have been heard, and all these kinds of points that have been made by that community has really brought us to the point where we can be more responsive, and there's the opportunity for that education to occur.
And 1557 actually applies for policies that begin January 1st. So if people were to enroll, Section 1557 would apply to them.
That's correct.
So that's a big thing to consider out there, everybody. You know, it's a non-discrimination statement.
That's correct.
That's very strong for us. And we need to take advantage of that
and
get the care we need, you know.
Exactly, Pat. And, you know, the health delivery partners also have been furnished and are being furnished regularly the 10 things with which they have to comply, which includes notice to the LGBTQ community as they come into a facility that, in fact, they have rights to be treated without discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
One of the things that, and this is where, I won't mention my company, my insurance company, where they drive me nuts. Daniel, one of the things you do is you help people go on healthcare.gov, figure out, okay, this policy, your doctor is on that policy, these drugs are covered by this policy. And we have had cases over the last few years where, okay, we're no longer covering this drug. And if you're on an HIV med that's been keeping you alive, you don't want to go to that other drug and see if it will work too. The other thing that this company, whose headquarters are right up the street here, has done is Texas Health Resource is no longer covered on the policy, and that's in the middle of the year. Well, that's not just one little doctor's office. That's Presbyterian Hospital, Harris Methodist Hospital. It's hospitals all over that all of a sudden you can't go to, and it's in the middle of the year. What do you do about that? Because you can't go back to healthcare.gov during the year and say, well, my doctor is at this hospital, and I want to continue using the services that I contracted for at the beginning of the year. But you cannot go back and change your plan, can you?
Or can you?
Well, you can if you qualify for a special enrollment period. So, sadly, you know, your provider pulling out of that
of one particular
of coverage, hospital, particular hospital, yeah. Or it's not something that we can control.
But you can't change in the middle of the year.
You can change plans and you could access plans if you qualify for a special enrollment period.
Which
special enrollment period, example, you know, marriage, change of income.
Mm-hmm. If you change a job.
Change a job.
If you lost coverage.
Right.
Or have a child.
Have a child. So all of those qualify you for a special enrollment period. You could access any time.
And that's not this. This is, you know, we're with one company. We're with them for the year. And can't change that.
What you're talking about is the adequacy of network.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Is there a reason that I can't change my provider, but my provider can change who can provide that service to me in the middle of a contract when we signed a contract with them at the beginning of the year?
Well, you know, the consumer also always has the right to appeal some of those changes to the insurance company, and there's a procedure. Oftentimes, there's several steps that you can go through to have those appeals. You may note that some of the insurance companies have gone to an MCO so that there are multiple providers with a particular group. As opposed to the PPO, where you could go directly to an individual provider. And that's another example of some of the adjustments that are occurring in the market over time as the insurance companies better understand the needs of the consumers that they're serving. So, unfortunately, there are challenges with certain populations, and I think it's an important issue for the LGBT community particularly to be very vocal about, mm-hmm. so that they're, I think that what you will find, even going forward and certainly looking past, that there has been a continual attempt to have as few disruptions as possible in the economics as well as in the health delivery system. Mm-hmm. Though a big emphasis on the ACA has been refining the delivery system and putting the people first. What are those groups that provide services that are the best informed about a specific population? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of adjustments that will continue, I think, to occur mm-hmm. in the plans.
One adjustment we could make in Texas is that our governor and our legislature could, you know, have a state exchange and expand Medicaid in our state. But we're one of those states that doesn't.
Well, it's good for you to mention that, because actually there are 31 states across the country. I think the larger question is, and I hear people in the communities all the time, and Daniel is with one of the groups within a coalition in the DFW area, which includes numerous, numerous not-for-profits and for-profit entities, as well as insurance agents that really are partners in providing these services. But what you'll find is the question that's raised about all vulnerable populations, not just the Medicaid, but, you know, the elderly.
Mm-hmm. And exactly. We need to take a break, and we're going to be talking a little bit more about this after the break. Our guests are Marge Petty, she's from the Department of Health and Human Services, and Daniel Bouton, he's from Community Council of Greater Dallas. It's the second annual KNON Toy Drive coming up on Saturday, December 17th. That's next Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. KNON is collecting toys for Children's Medical Center. Toys can be dropped at the KNON studios. I should say the beautiful KNON studios at 11311 North Central Expressway, at Top 10 Records at 338 West Jefferson Boulevard in Oak Cliff, or Sons of Herman Hall, 3414 Elm Street in Deep Ellum. Free tacos will be served from Taco Deli, free barbecue, live music from Ernie Johnson, Pat Hannon, Hugo King, Greg A. Smith, and JMAC, Intensify, Sunlight Choir, Twang Liner. Can you tell I did not read this ahead of time? K.M. Williams, Lazeth, Hartley Bristol, Pastor Bernita T. Scott, Renee Maldonado, and the Dallas exclusive Boys Cadets. Last year it was on Sunday, and it was during our show. It was a lot of fun. Stop by, because it really is a lot of fun. Just bring a toy, bring it unwrapped. I know they distribute them throughout the hospital. Just last week, we were over at Children's Hospital. We were delivering teddy bears from the teddy bear party. They were our guests a couple of weeks ago. That was a lot of fun. And kids were already, as we were delivering, coming up to us and saying, can we have a teddy bear? These toys make a difference in those kids' lives. So the event is free. Bring an unwrapped toy next Sunday, 10 to 4 p.m. And we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly on KNON FM in Dallas. We're talking to Marge Petty from the Department of Health and Human Services, and Daniel Bouton, who's from the Community Council of Greater Dallas. We're talking about the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, or more commonly known as Obamacare. We like the Affordable Care Act. We hate Obamacare, and it's going to be repealed. But the ACA, we really like.
Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah.
I mean, they've done, like, polling and found people. There are people in this country who believe that there are two different things. They like one and hate the other. It's really bizarre. But they're the same thing.
Funny.
Obamacare is the Affordable Care Act.
It is. There's a lot of misconceptions out there about what the ACA is, what it isn't, what it is doing, what it's not doing. This is for either of you. You guys are in there talking to the people who've actually got it. What is the feedback from them? What are they saying? Are they liking it? Like prior to them not having insurance?
Well, I think one of the key things is there are certainly elements that would affect a lot of individuals and families if, or in fact, it were repealed. You know, the repeal and replace is the political slogan, actually, and it's really important for people, I think, to separate that rhetoric from the reality. Right now, we've got 20 million people now that have health insurance who didn't have it before. No one actually can be discriminated against based on pre-existing conditions or, you know, at one point they might even consider that being a female was a pre-existing condition because we had to pay more money for our premiums just because we were females. So we're talking about 129 million people that would be affected and impacted by the pre-existing condition change that might be made.
Do you know one thing that was considered a pre-existing condition for a while was being gay? I remember there was a time during the late 80s or early 90s where the insurance where our company was in the 75219 zip code, which is Oak Lawn, was going to be four times as high as if we listed our company address four blocks away where we had our company office, our main company office, as opposed to a store that we had right on Cedar Springs. It was going to be about four times as much because it was a different zip code. So
that's a no-no now.
Good.
Yeah. Now rates are determined by the city, aren't they? Or area or even county.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can't just discriminate, oh, the gay people live in that neighborhood. And literally it was going to be four times as high. For us,
and,
because
know, some,
of who we were.
Some of the key elements that are part of the ACA include the donut hole. I mean, if it were repealed, it would reopen the donut hole. There are 11 million Medicare prescription drug beneficiaries that would save currently an average of about $2,000 per beneficiary, and that's compared to now. It would kick young adults under age 26 off their parents' plans. Very popular measure. Anybody
yes.
that's got kids under 27.
Anyone who's under 26.
That. Exactly. Exactly.
Except the way millennials are right now. I guess I shouldn't say this. They'd want to stay on their parents' policies beyond that.
Right.
Go to 35, 40. Still on my parents' policy.
You know, an additional impact could be that 10 million Americans now receive tax credits for the purchase of their premiums up to almost $3,000 a year for some individuals. And it could also raise the cost of 150 million people with employer coverage who could, again, face annual or lifetime limits. And currently, those are unlimited.
And when you're talking about lifetime limits, some of the things you're talking about is like for HIV care. The drugs
exactly.
can cost. Truvada is one of the main drugs. It's $1,000 a month, so that's $12,000. It adds up quickly.
Exactly.
An emergency room visit, if you have something wrong, $40,000. Well, if you have a few of those, you're going to bump up towards your million-dollar limit pretty quickly.
Right. You know, if you look at the numbers of the percentage of people that have pre-existing condition, it's about 50%, 40 to 50%. So those folks really were squeezed out of the market previously. One of the things that's been talked about in a new idea to be proposed would be similar to go back to the high-risk pools that have existed under every state, but the not only the premiums, it was really a catastrophic care, basically, maybe a $10,000 deductible, so that it really squeezed people out of the market in terms of affordability. So I think one of the things people need to keep in mind as there is a discussion about new ideas or a repeal, even though they're, for about 6 years they've talked about this and nothing has occurred, is to look at the three issues. Is it accessible? You know, how available is it at a low-cost rate? With a subsidy, does the quality exist? Is there financial security and the protections that occur now? And is it, again, affordable? Does it increase costs for people who are on Medicaid or Medicare? And is it fiscally responsible? Does it increase ultimately the budget deficit. And we got a lot of reports from the Congressional Business Office how those kinds of things would be impacted.
I think a lot of people don't realize that, let's say it's pre-ACA, and steadily premiums are climbing, the cost of health care, more deductibles. I mean, it's just higher and higher. And then the Affordable Care Act came along, and while premiums may still climb, they're not climbing at the rate they were. And so when people complain that their premium may be higher this year than, say, it was last year, it doesn't mean the ACA was going to level and zero out any kind of increases. But it stemmed the market, because we had a stupid system before.
Right.
We had really stupid
and it's
system.
Varied according to state. I mean, but the average was about a 12% increase. And even with some of the discussions that have occurred about premium increases now, it's still remarkably lower.
And you know, you hear these people say, well, my insurance went up. Well, yeah, it's probably going to go up. The ACA wasn't promising to not address that, but it takes time. The whole plan is to span like 10 years
right.
to begin to really change the fundamental infrastructure of the system.
And that was one of those misconceptions I was talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think it's important to share some of that CMS data that says that 73% of Texans can find plans less than $75 a month for their premium.
What is the quality of those plans? What are people getting as opposed to on the marketplaces paying a little bit more and getting more? Do you see what I'm saying? How good are those plans that people are getting for $75? If they pay a little bit more, how much more are they actually getting on average? Because you're talking about a bunch of different plans there.
Right, and when I talk about the 73% that could access those plans for less than $75, there's many different factors. I think the quality of the plan is the same as somebody like me that I'm getting a plan through my employer, somebody that goes through the marketplace that could access that same plan, the quality of the plan is the same. It's just the different factors that people that go through the marketplace could apply for a premium tax credit to lower that premium. Somebody that doesn't have, the blessing, somebody like me or you that have access to healthcare through their employer, mm-hmm. but access to healthcare through the marketplace.
So they are the same plans, basically, right?
Correct. Just, to circle back to what Marjorie was saying earlier, the marketplace is just the meeting point where you're going to look at many different options and many different private market companies. So I don't want to say an insurance company because I don't want to forget one of them, but you could access and see all the different options. Again, the plans, and, just to go back to what Patty was saying and to circle back to that, that's something very important to remember. People are not enrolling into Obamacare. That really doesn't exist.
It's just a nickname.
Absolutely. So it's the Affordable Care Act, and in the Affordable Care Act, we have the marketplace, and the marketplace is a meeting point where we are going to look at many different options.
Right.
You're not
enrolling in Obamacare. You're
absolutely
enrolling in Blue Cross or United Healthcare or whatever.
Correct. Yeah. That's correct. One of the other things that might be of interest to your listeners is that research is showing right now that about half of the remaining uninsured do not know that there are premium tax credits that are available to keep their coverage affordable. So, say somebody has their own private business, and so they have to be self-insured. They don't belong to a large group of insured that can help balance risk of who's healthy and who's not. So they're out there by themselves, and they may go directly to an insurance plan and sign up for insurance, where if they'd gone to the marketplace, they could get a subsidy to be insured by perhaps the same insurance company. So interestingly enough, I've got data just on Texas. There, right now we know that the number of consumers potentially who are eligible for a premium tax credit for this coming year, 38,600 people who would be eligible but may have already enrolled in an insurance plan where they're not getting any subsidy at all.
Wow.
We've talked about or mentioned the possibility of the Affordable Care Act being repealed. If that were to happen, how many people are we looking at that could potentially lose health insurance?
Well, I think it's conceivable that about, I mentioned earlier, the impact could be on as many as 129 million people, and it depends on what the content of that repeal would look like. If, in fact, it did not include pre-existing conditions, we're talking about 129 million people nationally that might be squeezed out of the market in terms of affordability. So it just depends on what the details of that would look like.
Sure.
But I do have to say that really the ACA opponents have promised that replacement, you know, they've talked about replacement now for about 6 years, but there is
not much. They haven't seen anything.
Right, in terms of the detail.
Right.
You're exactly right, Pat. But what I think is important to remember is that there's been a lot of concern about the disruption. And, you know, some language saying, you know, we don't want there to be disruption in the market. Well, if you look even in the paper today, Dallas Morning News talked about hospitals and insurance companies saying they're concerned about the stability if, in fact, there were changes made and what that would look like. So we're talking about all of us being affected in some way, either whether or not we can get insurance or not, or the rest of us in terms of economically, how that might impact the entire market. You know, part of the challenge with the ACA is that the pieces of this were put together very carefully. So you've got the entire look, which include people with pre-existing conditions, but also the mandate that everybody participates. So you've got younger, healthier people, perhaps, that help balance out the costs. And so that's an important piece economically.
Mm-hmm. Certainly for an insurance company looking to to offer something in the marketplace.
And to price it.
Right. And they need those younger folks to participate.
And going back to what you brought up earlier, Patty, about health premiums going up every year, and now pre-ACA, they were just going up like rapidly, but now they're still going up, but not at the same rate. If the repeal were, if the ACA was totally gutted, let's just say they got rid of it all and started all over, wouldn't that make, that would go, take our premiums going right back up even higher at a higher rate?
Well, again, you know, it's difficult to talk about hypotheticals because we don't know what the details of that would look like. And, you know, there were hours spent on the comprehensiveness of the ACA as it stands right now, which also includes delivery service reform, the focus on a family health home that people would go to, that would know that they could go to for preventive piece. So this was not just a short-term view. It was a long-term view that included how do people participate in their own health, the prevention piece, which you had mentioned earlier, raising questions about some of the immunizations and the preventive health exams that are available without cost when you are part of the ACA, so that you can have that continuum of everybody contributing to their own health as it improves the health of the community itself.
And I think one of the important things that we need to remember about the ACA and the whole idea of it, and the kind of cradle-to-grave approach of comprehensiveness and trying to control costs and such, is that I've lost my thought now.
Because I'm squeaking the microphone.
That
down,
might be it.
Down three feet to your level.
But the whole idea of it was we've been living as a sick community, and we think of the world in terms of illness and sickness, and the ACA is it through lots of different factors and pressures and programs over time wants to move us from an idea of sickness to an idea of wellness. And so, I mean, how many times have we gone for a preventive care and not had to pay anything?
Right.
I mean, that's part of the design, is to get people to think about prevention, because it's, for one, it's so much cheaper, to pay for prevention than to wait till somebody gets so incredibly sick, and maybe they're uninsured, and they show up at an ER, and that's their health care. And that comes back on all of us. Mm-hmm. If they go to Parkland, that's
on all of us.
That's on all of us. Mm-hmm. And so that prevention thing and that wellness focus and the turning of it, I think that is already entrenched now in the marketplace of providers and carriers.
I think you're right, Pat.
And I don't think there's any turning back. And when I look at like the company I work for in health IT, that's an assumption we move on. In our industry, we're going to wellness.
To underscore what you're saying, I think many of the healthcare providers, I'm thinking hospitals in particular, were on this course already. And what occurred when the ACA was passed is that it accelerated the look they were taking of the rate of infections that people get when
right.
they go into the hospital and how they've turned that back around, or the reduction in the cost savings that have occurred in the U.S. There's a 30-day rule. If people are in the hospital and they return after 30 days, it's a ding on the hospital. So it's encouraged hospitals to do more of a wraparound look, mm-hmm. how to prevent that re-entry into the hospitals. It has saved billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cheaper to keep the patient in the hospital one more day, make sure they're well, than have them come back sicker than they were before and stay for a week.
Right, or to build community services around those folks to make certain that they're taking their medications or that they're doing their follow-up hospital visits, and look at some of the social determinants that are part of that.
And just the fact that people are well.
Well, I was just going to say, this week I went for my annual exam, and I got two vaccines. One of them was Prevnar. Well, isn't it cheaper to give me a Prevnar vaccine? I don't know how much it is even, but if it's $100 or $200, because some of those vaccines are that expensive. So $200 or treat me for pneumonia.
Right.
Which one's cheaper? Right?
Exactly.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis, and our guests are Marge Petty and Daniel Bouton. And we'll have more with them. We're talking about the Affordable Care Act and more with them in just a moment. And we're talking about the Affordable Care Act, and if you didn't hear the beginning of the show, there's a deadline to get insurance and be insured by January 1st. The deadline is December 15th. If you miss that deadline, you have another deadline the end of January to get covered by February for the rest of the year. One of my questions is, if you're not covered for quite the whole year, like you miss this deadline and you don't sign up till next Monday and that delays it till February, there's a penalty to pay if you don't have insurance. Is there a penalty to pay for a partial year of not being insured, like not being insured in January?
Yeah, there's a percentage. The important thing to remember is that there's a 3-month consecutive grace time that the federal government and the IRS gives you for not having insurance. So that's why it's all planned. The last day is January 31st, which makes your insurance effective March 1st. So that's your January, February months that you don't have insurance, but
right, and I said the end of January gets you in February. End of January gets you in March.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
But there is a waiver as long as you're insured by the end of that first quarter.
Absolutely.
Okay.
There is a waiver. Now, it's important to remember, if you lose coverage in the middle of the year, you lose your coverage through your employer, there's a 60-day period that you have to access other options.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, that's either COBRA or through the marketplace.
Now, COBRA generally is very expensive.
That is correct.
So the marketplace is open not for people in general, but for somebody who's had a change of
a life event change.
A life event change.
Correct.
The marketplace is open, and you can go to healthcare.gov in that case?
Absolutely. So COBRA is not your only option. You could access a marketplace and find a plan that it's going to be affordable to you, especially if you just lost your job.
Yeah, and we keep saying affordable, and we were talking about this a little bit before the show. Everybody's heard all these plans have gone way up in price, but how does it actually affect most consumers in the marketplace using healthcare.gov? Does it
about $4?
I can't pay that.
The difference would be $4. Yeah. And, you know, you were mentioning earlier the premium increases. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we've heard that it's 5.8% premium increase. Well, the average over time has been 8% or more. So even though there is an increase, it's much less. And mm-hmm. the same is true with employers as well. It's approximately the same. We've seen a 3.4% increase compared to an 8% average growth over time. So, but I think Daniel's point is really crucial. What happens is the subsidy also increases. So the average of the increase that people are having to pay per month is maybe a $4 increase.
And I think that's really important because there is this sort of perception that somehow the Affordable Care Act is driving prices up. But no, they were going up already, and they were going up a lot higher every year over year.
And quicker.
Right. And the Affordable Care Act, let's just imagine for a moment that all 50 states participated in the state marketplace exchanges and expanded Medicaid. And young people signed up for health insurance, even though they're low risk, very low risk, but they have it in case that, you know, they mess up their knee in playing soccer or whatever it might be. I mean, it happens. And everybody participated. Costs would come down. Costs would dramatically come down over time.
And Kaiser Foundation has all the research that exactly supports what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly. But what do we have? We have some GOP governors in states who say, no way. In fact, I'm going to sue the president. And we have lots of folks who are saying, well, I don't need insurance. You know, and this, but they're, when they do get sick, it's going to cost all of us. When they wait until it's, oh gosh, now I've got to really go to the doctor or the ER, that's going to cost all of us. Mm-hmm. And if they had participated from the beginning, they would have had that coverage.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that keeps healthcare costs high is are those people who go directly to the emergency room. And now, even with the Affordable Care Act and more people having insurance, one of the surprises was more people are going to the emergency room instead of seeking out a private doctor or going to an emergency care clinic, you know, the doc in the boxes that are out there. But they are still going to the emergency room. It seems to me, you had said, March, that they're moving toward this. Seems to me that emergency rooms, I'm not saying a hospital should turn people away, but an emergency room should say, oh, you have the flu, you need such and such a check. No, this is the emergency room for emergencies. You need to go down the hall to the care clinic or whatever it is. But that's actually something that is happening some.
Well, and what many people don't know is, you know, there are networks that exist throughout every state. They're federally qualified health centers. There are 320 across Texas. There's some in just multiple sites in each county. There are health clinics that are available. And what we've seen with this jump start through the ACA is the acceleration for hospitals to provide neighborhood networks. And one of the things they've done is to look at where are the zip codes where we're getting the most influx from to the ER, that people are coming in for bringing their children with asthma, whereas if they had an easily accessible service near their neighborhood, they could do the preventive piece that doesn't require waiting until it's an emergency or a crisis. And so what you see is the shift that's going on all across the country for those kinds of resources. People maybe that couldn't access before a private physician, but now have a multi. And the other thing about the ACA is that it pushes the idea of quality care. Maybe somebody really needs a social worker mm-hmm. as opposed to a physician. Or if you've got a broken arm, are they asking the questions, how did that happen? Maybe it's driven by a domestic violence situation. So there's a push for looking at those social determinants that are much broader than an initial crisis.
And, you know, in my...
And wellness. Yeah. So it all points back to wellness.
Exactly.
What's going on here, you know?
In my wellness exam, they gave me, like, a four-page questionnaire that went at just those kinds of questions. I read them to my doctor, and I said, they want to know if I'm too shy to talk to people. They want. I don't think that's my problem. Am I afraid? You know, and it was like one thing after another that, yeah, I'm having that problem. And he just laughed and said, don't bother filling that out, please, because our people will not know what to do with your answers. So, yeah.
David, to circle back to what you were talking about, patients going to an emergency room instead of going to see a physician, I want to mention that there's a phenomenal campaign with CMS called Coverage to Care, that the navigators out in the community are educating consumers. And we educate them from, complex terminology to know how to read your insurance card, to know when is a good moment to go to the emergency room and when is a good moment to grab the phone and call your physician to schedule an appointment. So I think the education piece is very, very important and is one of the hats that we wear, because we believe that educating the community is gonna make that switch to we're seeing less people going to the emergency room for a flu, an increase in consumers calling a doctor to schedule an appointment to go get antibiotics for that flu. So again, I am pro education and I believe that my navigators out in the field are educating those consumers on things like that.
And Daniel, that is a great point, and it's a great opportunity to remind the listeners that sometimes the best education is peer education. If it's a voice that they recognize or somebody that speaks a language that is a comfort zone for the listener, and what we've got right now, your story really can make a huge difference. So you can join the conversation on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram by sharing why health coverage was important to you. So when you mention Coverage to Care, it's hashtag Coverage Matters. And every one of our listeners can play a big part in getting one more person to join the prevention and wellness journey so mm-hmm. that we're all healthier.
And I think, too, that encourages people to say, wow, that story almost is exactly mine.
Exactly.
And look what happened here. This could happen, this could be an improvement in my life as well.
Just a reminder, the LGBT voice is so important. And so share your story.
Yeah, it's not going to be after January 20th.
Hashtag coverage matters.
One of the reasons to do this is there's going to be a fight over repealing the Affordable Care Act. And it's a matter of, are they going to repeal? Are they going to repeal and replace? Are they going to, and if they're repealing and replacing with something that works better, look, the original act was over 1,000 pages. Nobody expected it to be perfect from the beginning.
Right.
I mean, Medicare, Social Security, every program has had adjustments over the years. You have to. You have to get it right. But there's never been an attempt to get this right in Congress. The attempt has been just to get rid of it. So there is going to be a rush to repeal and replace with something better that'll get more people insured. That's great. Repeal and replace a couple of years later. That's going to be extremely expensive because, okay, we'll have the Affordable Care Act next year, then the year after we won't, and then they'll replace the year after, but that'll be phased in over a number of years.
That's going to be bad.
That's going to be...
If that happens...
Isn't that going to be expensive to do? I would think, and I don't know that you can comment on that. That's one of those things, Marge, that... who knows what they're going to do, but I think you can make a difference by writing to your legislator, especially if you live in a Republican district. Mm-hmm. I saw Bernice Johnson on Friday, and she's on board with the Affordable Care Act.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to worry about encouraging her. What you can do for her, because I asked her what people can do, she said, oh, honey, pray for me. But if you live in, like, Pete Sessions' district or whatever, the they understand that people are on health care for the first time and that they're going to lose their policies, tell them. And I think too often people are afraid to contact their congresspeople. Tell them that you want them to keep it or only repeal when they're going to replace with something that will cover more people.
Right.
I agree with that. Absolutely.
Repeal and replace cannot mean it could end up, if particularly if it's repeal and delay, it could mean repeal and collapse, and what it would lead to is the instability of the insurance market. A lot of the assurances of hospitals and providers in providing the care and supporting the continuing delivery service changes that are going on right now that are very positive. So,
and what you just described, Marge, is something that affects the stock market even. Stock market loves stability. And if an entire sector in our economy, namely healthcare, which is enormous, were to suddenly be destabilized, that could affect, it has a huge ripple effect in our entire economy.
Right. As I said earlier, I don't think Americans want to go back to replacing the donut hole, to kicking the young adults off. A lot of the
pre-existing
condition issue and all the numbers that would affect.
So what are the parts that you're hearing that people just hate in the Affordable Care Act? I'm sorry that they hate in Obamacare. Because what we keep hearing from congresspeople is, so you're going to do away with pre-existing conditions. Oh, no, people like that. So you're going to do away with keeping people on their insurance, on their parents' insurance till they're 20. Oh, no, people like that.
Yeah, so what's left? What are they really going to do to change it?
It could be that repeal and replace is we take Obamacare, we rename it, we repeal that one, we put the old one back in under the new name, and everybody loves it all of a sudden.
Or are people just upset, the ones who don't like it, claim not to like it, are they just upset because they're being forced to get insurance? I mean, have you heard any feedback?
And Daniel, do you hear that from some people? I would guess not, because people who are going to you for help are people who want insurance. You're not contacting the people who...
We see a little bit of both sides. The people that they have to, but just like Patty was saying, it's just such a blessing to have health insurance and to have access to care. So we always try to, turn that mentality. I always try to share the analogy of car insurance. Having car insurance is the law, and we love it when we need it, correct?
And even just basic liability, that's the law.
Absolutely.
It's the law.
It's a law.
People have said, oh, let's take that to the Supreme Court because that's just so unfair.
Yeah, so the analogy is you have an accident, you love that insurance, and you call your insurance right away, and nobody complains about it. So when you have an accident health-wise, your health insurance is right there to use. So it's important to think that way. And we try to change the mentality of those consumers. And, they always leave our office happy. They're able to look at their options in the marketplace. If they didn't find anything, there's other options. We always try to offer resources. So I want to say that people that leave our offices or our navigators, they're always on a positive note.
Give us the number to contact you again.
It's 844-831-9600. And we are ready to help.
And Daniel is a wonderful resource in this listening area. And if the audience is interested in just getting feedback that's anonymous and do shopping for their insurance resources, you can call healthcare.gov and the 1-800 number, which is 318-1-800-318-2596, and walk through the website to educate yourself, and then call Daniel and say, okay, now how does this apply in Waco or Dallas or Fort Worth?
Another good thing is to have together the things that you might need to find out whether you qualify for some assistance for the credits, the tax credits.
Absolutely.
So what would that be, like your W-2 if you're employed?
W-2.
Previous tax tax returns maybe, gather all that together, and then you can have everything you need then to to find out whether you qualify. Because you know you might qualify, and that would be even more assistance to get you on to a plan.
And consumers need to know that there's no commitment by visiting healthcare.gov. There's no commitment by seeing one of us at the community council. We just want to help. We just want to help you access for you to look at your options. And if you don't find anything, that's absolutely fine. There's no commitment by looking and by applying. And for those that qualify for a premium tax credit to lower those premiums, there's no better way to just look.
Right. And we do know, as I mentioned earlier, the 38,000 people are leaving money on the table because they could be eligible for a subsidy or a tax credit.
So it's in their best interest to you know, get over there, call the number, find out. What's that number again?
So directly through the Community Council of Greater Dallas is 844-831-9600. And healthcare.gov, it's 1-800-318-2596.
You know, it's just about top of the hour. Next show is not here yet, so we can keep talking for a few minutes till they get here. Let's do our top of the hour just so that we're legal.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
Okay, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis and Patty Fink. Can you stay with us just a few more minutes, and we'll just talk? I'm sure they're on their way. And so one of the things that we've been talking about is how healthcare has really changed since the Affordable Care Act has come in. Are there other things that you've seen? You know, we started talking about this a little bit with the community clinics as opposed to accessing your health care with through an emergency room. Okay, they'll be here in 5 minutes. So,
okay.
So what are some of the other things that you've seen or even that you've seen that you'd like to see changed?
A perfect example. Thank you, Dave, for asking that question. One of the things that we've seen in hospitals in Texas is really a focus on population health. So that, for example, clients that the emergency rooms are required to serve everyone that comes. But if you're triaged and identified that you've got diabetes, so to put together a group of folks that have diabetes and walk them through food, developing, you know, a menu that is responsive to diabetes so that it helps them manage their health condition better. Those are projects that have occurred all throughout Texas. There's 1,400 of them that have been sponsored by hospitals that are focused specifically on population health. What is it in our community that there is the greatest need for? It also includes the behavioral health piece, substance abuse, mental health support. So the hospitals are getting very adept at identifying groups of folks that could learn from each other and support each other, but also be educated in the process.
Have you heard from hospitals, either of you, that the burden has lessened in the emergency room since the Affordable Care Act?
Well, I think it's all an educational process, but because of these special projects that they have worked on, I think it's a better management of the influx of people coming into the ER.
And there's something, too, I think the LGBT community should pay particular attention to that's coming, and that's through what we used to call meaningful use. And I believe now it's MACRA. There's some name for it, but it's a requirement that that your providers can ask you, and it's completely optional for your reply. Ask you what your sexual orientation is. They can ask you what your how you self-identify as in terms of gender, and that's purely optional. And they can capture the information, and that's the beginning of toward a population health look. Your opportunity to contribute to data about our community, because really,
absolutely,
unless you go to some place like Fenway Health in Boston or some place that's really LGBT focused, you're probably not going to get known about in the population health sector.
Yes.
as an LGBT person. Mm-hmm. And so if you're asked by a provider and it's on a form you fill out before your appointment, and you're comfortable with it, please do share that. I think it's great that we get the beginnings of some real kind of look at what kind of things are, in terms of population health, are affecting the LGBT population. And that's across the country. So absolutely. Hopefully in a couple of years, after people answer the questions, and you can decline, it's fine. But if you feel comfortable doing so, please do, because that will help us build a look at, and the more we look at it, we found with lots of things in our community, the more we look at it and have some data to work with,
well,
the more we can take action on that.
I mean, I agree if you're comfortable, but if you're not comfortable, I say get comfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in your best interest.
Right.
You know,
right. And it's protected by HIPAA just like everything else. So.
It is.
You know, if you feel comfortable, please do. This is the beginnings. You know, imagine their time when they wouldn't even ask us. Mm-hmm. Well, now it's there. It's coming.
Yeah,
so
there's much, an increased recognition and emphasis on equality and lack of discrimination.
Well,
right across the board.
I mean, if you're just delivering health care, and that's a piece of health care, just understanding, like, how many times have I heard from lesbian friends that they couldn't get their doctor to understand they do not need birth control? Stop wasting my time on that, right?
True.
So, you know, just those little things, just deliver the best health care that I need for me. And I'm not asking for your judgment about who I am. I'm just asking you to treat me.
But we know that in our community, with or without the Affordable Care Act, there's a lot of reluctance to be candid with your physician and other providers unless you feel comfortable, because they could, I mean, in a world where we're not equal and not protected by law, there is that fear that you're going to be treated lesser than.
Except with 1557, you now are protected.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's, hopefully over time, that will settle in, and people who would think, well, I don't have to do, you know, full, you know, top quality care for those people, you know, it'll change. And so we have that. But we know that people are reluctant to talk oftentimes with their doctors and come out to their providers. You know, well, small towns, it's a big deal.
I've always asked my doctor their central, because I want to know. So if I can ask them, I think they should be able to ask me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, I mean, again, this goes under the category of, are you ever too shy to, which I didn't qualify for.
But I think it was Harvey Milk that said rights are won only by those who make their voices heard. Mm-hmm. So
exactly.
It's
exactly.
To us, mm-hmm. to everybody, yeah, to absolutely. Share what we know and what we need to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly it.
Since we're doing a second hour of this, let's just go back. Daniel is he works with healthcare navigators. So if you didn't hear this earlier, just real quickly, what does a healthcare navigator do? What can you do for somebody? Who qualifies to work with you?
So navigators, we wear many different hats, but one of them is, of course, we help the consumer access affordable health care and quality health care through the marketplace. So we're going to help the consumer with the application process. We're going to help them find the right providers. We're going to help them find a plan that is going to cover their medication. But the most important part now that we do is education. So we help consumers understand health insurance in general, from complex terminology to how to use it, how to read your insurance card, how to contact a doctor, how to make an appointment, when to go to the emergency room, when to go to see a physician, and also the advocacy part. Mm-hmm. So we'll wear many different hats in the community, but that's what we are doing. And don't forget the December 15th deadline that navigators were working so hard to make sure that consumers are enrolling by December 15th for their insurance to begin on January 1st.
Right, because the next deadline is January 31st.
January 31st.
And then your insurance doesn't kick in for another month after that, March 1st, so you would be without for 2 months.
That is correct.
And one other thing, if somebody decides not to enroll in the ACA, and I'm assuming no repeal when I'm asking this question, but the way the law stands now, what would the penalty be for not enrolling?
So the penalty continues to be the same as 2016, which is $695 per person, or 2.5% of their income, household income.
So that could be pretty high for somebody who can afford insurance.
Health insurance, absolutely.
Right. Okay. The next show is here. There, let them get set up for a few minutes. We're going to wrap it up. If somebody, have you ever had this? Has somebody come to you, you know, you're saying you want to get them on the right medication, but they haven't had health insurance before. Now they qualify for insurance. They can go to a doctor, and they find that the plan is just not really what they need because they have other medications and they need other specialists that aren't on. But people cannot change their plan in the middle of the year, right? They have to wait until the next year to change.
That is correct. Or like Amarj was saying, there's exemptions and there's appeals that we could help with, and we certainly help, you know, accessing those appeals through their insurance company. But you are correct. Mm-hmm. Unless you qualify for a special enrollment period, a birth of a child, loss of coverage, income changes,
a perfectly legal marriage,
in
the state of Texas.
Absolutely. So that qualifies you for a special enrollment period that you could access healthcare year long.
Okay. Marge, you looked like you had one thing to say to wrap up.
I just want to thank you all for the opportunity to be with you today, and also thank Daniel for his work. There are also people within the community that aren't just through Daniel's group. They're called, they are certified to assist, and they may be among a lot of the not-for-profits that people work through DFW area in a lot of the community coalitions that we have.
Good. I want to thank you both for being here. Daniel Bouton, who is with the Community Council of Greater Dallas. Marge Petty is with the Department of Health and Human Services. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.